Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Betches Media presents.
If you feel depressed and if you feel anxious and you feel confused, you know what? Welcome to the club.
Gazpacho, police.
Oh, my God.
What a stupid son of a bitch.
He believes that it's a woman's right, it's a woman's body, and it's her choice.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
Sayonara, sucka.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
And I'm Bridget Schwartz.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Of course, you just heard a new voice there. Bridget, welcome to your inaugural Betches Up podcast.
Thank you so much.
I can't believe this is the first time that our audience is going to hear your voice because you're such a huge part of the Betches Up. But finally, today's the day.
I'm so excited.
Bridget is our content assistant for news and activism, but she's basically just my right-hand woman, Sammy's right-hand woman. You're a lot of people's right hand. You have a lot of hands. A lot of right hands.
So many hands.
Bridget is with us today because we have truly an incredible interview. We just chatted with Alexis McGill Johnson, who is the CEO and president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America and the Planned Parenthood Action Fund. She was so lovely, wasn't she?
She was amazing.
I was like, I mean, most of our guests, like sometimes they're kind of serious and then sometimes our guests are kind of like silly. And I expected her to like, I mean, we got a great mix. She is obviously the CEO of Planned Parenthood. There's a lot of feelings. There's a lot of weird vibes right now. And we really just like stewed in it together and it was great.
Yeah, it was like lovely. Just
so lovely. I know. I almost thought forgot we were recording. I wish I could like text her like, we should do that again sometime.
If only.
So stick around for that. We talk all about, you know, Planned Parenthood is so important right now. I mentioned in the interview that I know personally, as I've heard about a lot more people's abortion stories, how many people rely on Planned Parenthood? I know you interned for Planned Parenthood. Or like they've been part of your kind of activism for a while, right?
Yeah. In college, I like helped run our campus's Planned Parenthood Generation Action chapter, which is kind of like how I learned about activism more. Yeah. And like got really into politics and like women's rights stuff. And then, yeah, I like would volunteer and intern with them over the summers and everything. Everyone who I've like worked with and met there is like the loveliest person.
Yeah, totally. And what I'm realizing now, what's really cool about the conversation you'll just hear is, Bridget, you're 22 or 23? I'm almost 33. Alexis McGill Johnson mentioned she's 49. So we really have like three solid generations part of this conversation. So stick around with our interview with Planned Parenthood CEO Alexis McGill Johnson. And today we're here with Alexis McGill Johnson. She is the CEO and president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America and the Planned Parenthood Action Fund. Thank you so much for being here. You know, I was thinking if there's anyone I truly hope gets to enjoy their weekends these days, it's you. Did you get to do anything that took your mind away from I'm gesturing broadly at everything?
You know, I decided to host 20 girls for my 10-year-old's birthday party. So,
oh wow,
quite the most relaxing.
You could do anything.
But they were so badass. They did, you know, an escape room. One group came out in like 25 minutes. They'd figured it all out. And I said, you know what? The future's bright. I'm doing really good.
I mean, that's impressive. Did you create the escape room? Did you orchestrate it? Is it like a download?
Just got them there. You know, I think they just saw all the pieces and they put all the puzzles together. So, you know, I feel very good and hopeful.
That makes me happy. We need them in Congress for sure. We are so privileged to be chatting with you during a very critical time for reproductive rights, to say the least. So we're going to get right into it. We have been hearing from some of your colleagues that you at Planned Parenthood have been strategizing around how to provide abortion access to the most women in anticipation of Roe falling for a while now, even before the draft opinion leaked. You have been anticipating, you know, this summer, some dramatic changes. And so I'm curious what happened when the leaked draft came out, if it changed your strategy, if it is simply hastening some of that work. Kind of take us back to what that moment was like for you and your colleagues and then the actions that you took right away.
Yeah, look, you know, our motto's got to be you can't get ready, you got to stay ready.
Yeah.
You know, and that's real. So for the last, at least since the beginning of the last administration, when we saw all these judges getting confirmed to the, not just the Supreme Court, but the federal judiciary, and the number of cases that had been winding their way already through these bad courts, you know, really indicated to us that the courts were no longer our backstop, right? And certainly having a supermajority on the Supreme Court means that there is a willing opposition that exists in the Supreme Court to overturn Roe. I think they've been very vocal about that. And so at the beginning of seeing, I would say September 1, when they allowed the SB 8 law to go into effect in Texas, effectively rendering themselves ineffective because they allow them to like have this law without going through judicial review. And then hearing the oral arguments really just kind of double down. So where we are right now, right, is, you know, plans that, as you indicated, have been years in the making. They look like, you know, first and foremost, what does it mean to get care to people and people to care, right? What are the ways in which, you know, and what we know now from Texas being so draconian is we know what people want to do, how they want to receive their care, and really understanding where we need to place, you know, centers, where we need to partner differently, what kind of support, wraparound support patients need, what kind of technology support, gas money, you know, those are the sorts of things that, as you can imagine, entails in actually just getting care to people and people to care. You know, from a advocacy standpoint, you know, you also saw last weekend, right, the fierceness and the fire that came out with that draft opinion, right? That was also planned in advance that coincidentally, the day of action, we had been planning that day just to start to warm up the muscles because we've been in COVID for the last couple of years. We haven't had like mass demonstrations around this work. And, you know, and all through Texas, again, our priority has been to get care to people. And so really gearing up an advocacy muscle going into the next 5 months has been really important. And we saw a million people, like from the draft opinion to May 14th, we had a million people, that's 11 days, a million people show up at 450 events across the country and just like on fire. So,
and you were ready. I mean, Bridget and I turned out, you were ready. Everybody participating was ready with signs and swag, and people were ready to represent.
That's right. We stay ready.
Yeah. To like jump back into it. What, I guess pre-Roe was a completely different world than we're living in now. So in 2022, what does like a post-Roe world look like to you? And I guess, how does Planned Parenthood fit into that as an organization too?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, pre-Roe, pre-1973, again, what didn't happen was abortion stopping, right? People still sought access to abortion, oftentimes in illegal and more unsafe ways. But you could only get abortion legally in New York, Puerto Rico, Kansas at some point. You know, what it will look like in a post-Roe world will be, there will be ideally 24 states immediately that will still have availability. We know that there are 26 now that are poised to and emboldened really to move very extreme legislation that would restrict access. So it would look like the maps that people are seeing with a large swath of the Midwest and South rendering rendered kind of essentially, you know, with no access to care and provision. But we should also remember, I think that this got lost the day of the leak, right? The leak happened sometime late on a Monday night. Monday morning, the opposition rolled out their playbook for where they really wanted to go around the Supreme Court. They thought that even if the court comes back with a 15-week ban, essentially letting the Mississippi law stand, that where they really want to go is a 6-week ban, right? And so a nationwide 6-week ban, which would impact, obviously, the entire country. So, you know, what a post-Roe world looks like is actually, you know, we still have to create that, right? We still have opportunities to step in and say, okay, are we really willing to let ourselves roll all the way back, you know, when this right is put back to the state, knowing that they're going to continue to amp up? And I'm sure go for eventually a constitutional amendment guaranteeing, you know, personhood to unborn, you know, fetuses. So like, that is the reality of what we are looking at. And so it becomes even more incumbent for us to, you know, really double down and fight state by state to ensure that we are, you know, both on a federal level, expanding our Senate majority, fighting for governors, making sure that these state houses are getting, you know, flipped, and also on a local level, you know, being like, okay, what are we actually doing here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think as, you know, this moment has kind of demanded or encouraged people to, you know, be more open about their experiences with abortion access, I know personally, I have heard so many people that I didn't know had experiences directly with Planned Parenthood that did, because you just, even though abortion is accessible now, it's not really as accessible as you might think until you kind of try to access it. So I just have been personally overwhelmed recently by how many people that Planned Parenthood is part of their abortion story.
Honestly, it's the best part of my job is saying I work for Planned Parenthood, and it opening up for people an opportunity for them to talk about what Planned Parenthood has meant for them. And I, you know, whether I'm sitting on a plane or at an event or, you know, it just happened to match. Like I had on a Planned Parenthood tee this weekend running around in the escape rooms. And, you know, people just stop me and they want to have a conversation, not necessarily know him, but just like it just evokes that experience. And look, I mean, one out of four women has been to Planned Parenthood in their lifetime. So it clearly is a place that reaches, you know, a significant amount of folks. And we've been there through some of their most intimate times, whether they're talking about sex, talking about gender identity, getting an abortion, getting access to birth control and IUD. Like those are ways in which they know that we have shown up for them as a key part of the public health infrastructure.
Someday I wish would ask you more questions as Senator Bill Cassidy. I think this would be a good time to discuss some of the risks associated with childbirth and how our national leaders seem to take them for granted. So over the weekend, of course, Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, which has the nation's highest maternal mortality rate, suggested that this rate was skewed because Black women are more likely to suffer legal complications. I mean, in that case, he's not wrong, but he seemed to be saying this in order to defend Louisiana, to be defensive of this rate, as if like, oh, but ours wouldn't be so bad if we didn't have all of these Black women. I guess that just doesn't factor into him. So this is a medical doctor, and we talk about institutionalized racism, a medical doctor, a gastroenterologist, and he is saying, well, if as long as you control for Black women, then it's not that bad. I mean, what do you think when you hear those comments? I mean, with all you know that you have to work against, and then you just hear something like that, like, oh, this too?
You know, I mean, I saw it like first thing in the morning the other day, and I was like on Twitter, and I was like, you have got to be kidding me. First of all, let's be clear. Louisiana has the highest maternal mortality rate in the U.S., okay? It is triple the U.S. average.
Good God.
So when we say like, Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die than white women across the U.S. In Louisiana, we're talking 17 times, right? Like, that's insane, right? You also have like a third of your constituents are Black people.
Yeah.
So like, basically just saying like a third of y'all don't even matter.
I also thought like your tax breaks, like these people pay you. What is this man saying?
No, like you are representing your constituents. No. So, I mean, what comes to mind, right? Look, racism is a public health crisis, right? And it is really hard to fight the systems, the institutionalizing of racism in public health care, in healthcare broadly, and in particularly in public health care, when in fact people aren't even being discreet. They don't even feel like they have to hide their racism, right? I mean, like the beautiful benefit, the world that we lived in a post-civil rights era, was the fact that racism became a moral evil. And I am just really grappling with the fact that in so many realms today, people honestly feel very proud of showing up in this way. So it's just offensive. It tells you exactly what they think about Black women.
Do you worry that as the Supreme Court announces its final decision and we kind of navigate what the world looks like after that, that Planned Parenthood will continue to be villainized by anti-abortion groups, or even that like it might get worse too?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's any world where, you know, where there won't be opposition to abortion, where there won't be opposition to Planned Parenthood as representing that the value of self-determination and freedom. I don't think that, you know, I think they will continue their tactics of misinformation and disinformation. you know, and we will be right there. Like, you know, them not liking us is actually fuel to our, you know, 17, 20 million supporters, right? Of folks who are ready to take action at every turn. So it will just fuel us. And we will continue to fight back as people have come to expect us to do.
That's incredible. So we've talked a little bit about, you know, targets on providers and maternal mortality. And we talk a lot about just the dangers of outlawing abortion in general. I'm wondering if there's anything you lie in bed at night thinking about related to this issue, or what might happen when Roe is overturned that is just not getting enough attention, something that maybe just isn't top of mind that will absolutely be like an externality. We start hearing about this if indeed 26 states immediately outlaw abortion.
Yeah, I think there are two things that I've been thinking a lot about. The first is, you know, that I actually think the leak helped us address. Like prior to the leak, one of the challenges that we were grappling with was that people just didn't believe it was going to happen, right? It was, you know, we did our own internal polling, and we saw that only a third of Americans believe that Roe could actually be overturned. And that's even with like being 9 months into Texas's SB8 ban against abortion at 6 weeks. Since the leaks, now 71% of voters believe that the right is at risk. I mean, I'm not sure why it's not like 100%, given like it was very clear in the draft opinion that was,
right.
But, you know, I think we have to recognize the fact that this has never happened before, and having a constitutional right taken away. And the thing that really worries me is that people don't fully understand the impact yet of what that means for people on the other end of these bans, right? I can talk in data, I can talk in systems, but at the end of the day, there are actual individuals who are seeking access to abortion, who are afraid of involving other people because they don't want them to be criminalized or surveilled or sued, who are traveling alone, who are, you know, desperate to get the care they need, most likely already mothers, because the majority of people seeking access are already parents, right? And they're making decisions about for the family they have, right? For the community that they live in. And, you know, and that's where I really feel like, you know, helping people understand what it will look like when a system that was, you know, has been set up and hasn't been perfect by any stretch now falls to a handful of states to absorb the access to care, now falls to a handful of providers who can stay in practice, because those other folks who, you know, have gone to medical school, probably still paying off their medical loans, will have to make different choices or may think about making different choices, because the reality is, you know, they will have to make a choice between living where they are and not providing, or moving and identifying an opportunity elsewhere. Yeah. Like, that's the reality. We had a patient in a hospital in Texas with an intended pregnancy, or one of our providers had been seeing this patient. And she was told, after she learned that the pregnancy was no longer viable, that, you know, there was nothing they could do for her, and that she would essentially have to go home and wait for sepsis to settle in. And so the choices that even hospitals are making because of hospital administrators and insurers, the choices that, you know, will impact, you know, whole healthcare systems across the country because of people being pushed into other areas to get care, that's what we're not talking about. The fact that we are essentially not only eroding healthcare systems, but we are eroding trust inside of healthcare, right? Which is the currency. You cannot trust your provider to offer you the best, you know, medical procedure that you ask for. That's going to impact the way in which people are treated and cared for. And that, you know, I think is a long-term effect that we don't even know how to quantify right now.
Gosh, yeah. As you described that story, before Bridget gets in the next one, I'm thinking, you hear all these hypotheticals that people use to try to get anti-abortion rights people to understand, like, well, what would you do if there was four toddlers over here and four fetuses over there? It's like, these aren't hypotheticals. You just described a woman who was already on the planet, who, you know, her life is now at risk. So this is already happening.
Yeah, it's already happened. It's already
happened. And I mean, as all of this is happening, primaries and midterms are going on in the background too. And I know Planned Parenthood isn't necessarily a political organization. It's a reproductive healthcare organization primarily. But what would you like to see for potential senators who could codify Roe or consider judicial reforms, all things that would have huge implications on reproductive rights moving forward.
You know, yeah, we are a healthcare provider first and foremost, and healthcare has been politicized, right? So, you know, as president of the Planned Parenthood Action Fund, I will tell you that voters will look at the candidates up and down the ballot this year in particular to defend the right to abortion and all the freedoms that we stand to lose, right? I think that is something really incredibly important to understand. Poll after poll shows that people understand that this is about power and control. At the end of the day, like, do they get power and control over their body, or do they want politicians to make these decisions for them? And I think what you're seeing right now is that abortion is already dominating the midterm election cycle. You see a number of folks. There was a Monmouth poll that indicated that a quarter of all adults have indicated that abortion is their top issue, and in a PBS poll. We've also seen that the enthusiasm gap has increased dramatically among Democrats around this issue, almost by a 26-point margin. And so I think that is really what we are seeing. And, you know, we've gone from just a few weeks ago saying, like, you know, oh my God, the midterms, it's going to be, it's going to be horrible. It's going to be like a sweep. To now being like, oh no, there is actually an opportunity to maintain a majority of people who support, you know, access to abortion and even expand that majority. And I think that is, you know, that's really powerful. And the more the other side continues to come out their mouth with crazy things like what Senator Cassidy said, or, you know, what the bill that they introduced in Louisiana that's like wants to make IUDs and Plan B homicide.
Halfway out of the birth canal saying
exactly
these things.
Against IVF. Like, come on. Like,
this
the
is
more
not popular.
You go, the less popular it be. So,
yeah. As you were saying that voters are saying abortion is their number one issue, I just had Lizzo's About Damn Time playing in my head because it's
exactly,
been like
right?
So many others for so long. So, to close the loop here, I mean, I kind of have two questions to end. My biggest one is just how you stay motivated. I mean, this moment is demanding so much of you and many of us who have done nothing but fight for this for lifetimes for some people. What is your advice for kind of lifting your head out of the fog of, you know, rage and exhaustion we're all feeling? And then the second question, just to make sure, how can we help you and help Planned Parenthood, you know, really rally in this moment? Because we're really all in this, like, together. It's a sisterhood.
It is, yes. And I'm so excited to be with you all, bitches.
<It's amazing>. Awesome.
No, because, you know, so I meditate a lot on this poem by Alice Walker called Hope is a Woman Who Lost Her Fear.
Whoa. Cool.
And it just, like, every time I think about that line, I think about the fact of, like, what does it mean to be fully unapologetic? What does it mean to be fully, you know, unafraid in a moment where, you know, this is like, it is about abortion. And it also is so representative of so many other fundamental rights that we care about. So there is hope because I can see people reacting to it, right? I can see how it is affecting folks and folks who've never engaged in conversation. Yes, it's about damn time. Mm-hmm. And also, like, you know, this is a moment that, you know, we have to ask ourselves newly, right? And particularly as for our generation, right? Like, I grew up with the right. I'm 49 years old. It's always been present in my life. And now we have to ask ourselves, who are we going to be when we are no longer defending Roe, right? What is it going to mean for us as the leaders? This happened on our watch. And we have got to, you know, we have got to get it together to think about, like, how are we going to build even more expansive, inclusive right? Mm-hmm. Around equality and how are we going to kind of unleash our own brain power and our, you know, people power in order to make that happen. So, like, that gives me hope, even in the midst of all of this crazy. And the support, you know, look, I mean, I think it's really, we are always grateful for the support that you can give to Planned Parenthood, plannedparenthood.org. You can support your local affiliate wherever you are. I think it's also important to support the independent providers in the states where we are losing access. You know, many of them are critically important to maintain the lawsuits that will continue to happen in those states as we fight. So you can go to keepourclinics.org to learn more about those particular providers. And abortion funds, the National Network of Abortion Funds, abortionfunds.org. are helping people get access to care. Like I said, you know, at this point, it's like it's gas money, it's hotels, it's transportation, it's, you know, we have, you know, some of our providers, you know, are literally digging in their drawers, yeah, their desk drawers, and giving people snacks for their mm-hmm. long journeys. And I think that, you know, whether you are fighting on a, you know, supporting kind of a broad network or just doing what you can locally, I think it just matters so, so much.
That was wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And thank you for everything you're doing.
Thank you.
Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
And I'm Bridget Schwartz.
And this is the Betches Sub Podcast. Bye.
The Betches Sub Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com.
Betches.